Welcome, and thank you for listening to the Jizo An Zen Community's Dharma Talks. We are happy to make these recordings available to you. Please consider making a one-time or recurring donation via the link on our webpage found under Become a Member. We thank you wholeheartedly. Gassho.
So, tonight I thought I would say a few words about the topic of humility. So I think we all know or have met people that seem so grounded or humble. There is a certain presence about them that is unique. When we meet someone who radiates humility, we feel more relaxed. And why is that? I would say that's because we know that we are being fully seen, heard, and accepted for who we are. Truly humble people are able to offer this kind of gift to us because they see and accept their own strengths and limitations without defensiveness or judgment, a core dimension that cultivates a powerful compassion for all beings, human and non-human alike. In Zen, humility, the feeling that we all share common ground, is both a prerequisite to awakening and an expression of mature spirituality. Central to our practice is the phrase, "I don't know," which permeates every aspect of Zen. Sometimes you'll see or hear it referred to as not knowing. Zen is distinctive for an approach that is simultaneously profound and disarmingly simple. The willingness, even eagerness, to say, "I don't know." This phrase stands as a powerful symbol of humility and openness. It's an acknowledgement of the inherent limitations of our understanding, a conscious letting go of certainty, and an embracing of the profound mystery that characterizes our existence. In a world where many religions claim absolute truth and definitive answers to life's biggest questions, Zen Buddhism's emphasis on not knowing stands in stark contrast. It's an approach that can initially seem perplexing, even mysterious. But for those who dive deeper, it reveals an intriguing perspective on life and the nature of reality. In Buddhist circles, there is one person that comes to mind that just exemplifies humility, His Holiness the Dalai Lama. For all his extraordinary achievements throughout his life, he is extremely humble. The same can be said of Thich Nhat Hanh. In general, humility liberates us from false perceptions about the world and the intentions of others. It allows us to be more genuine with the people that we come in contact with. Being humble in thought, speech, and mind benefits ourselves in every relationship one can conceive of, from those we love to mere acquaintances. Because of this quality of humility, it is no wonder that His Holiness and Thich Nhat Hanh remained incredibly content and serene even after experiencing so much hardship, hardships that would break more ordinary individuals. A humble person is easy to be around. They do not waste their time on bragging about what they have or vacations that they went on. They play down their achievements and are more attentive to others' needs. The opposite is someone who is proud and conceited. It can be really challenging to spend time with someone who is boasting. When in their presence, I really have to work hard on the paramita of patients. Typically, they're only interested in selling themselves and have little or no interest in what you think or know. And some have big egos and project their ego through their speech. During a conversation, when you finally get a chance to say something, they cut you off mid-sentence in order to reassert their superiority. In addition, they typically are not open-minded and are not willing to learn from others, as they are convinced that they already know everything. But a humble person is usually quiet, respectful, and attentive. Which person would you rather be around? The term humility is derived from the word humus. It may be translated as grounded or from the earth. Webster's dictionary defines humility as freedom from pride or arrogance. From a religious context, humility typically means the recognition of the self in relation to a deity or deities and submission to that deity as a member of a given religion. And since Buddhism, Zen in particular, is essentially focused on self-examination with the aim of attaining awakening through meditation and other practices, humility takes on a different role. Humility in this context is a characteristic that is both an essential part of spiritual practice and the result of it. As a quality, it is deeply connected with compassion and wisdom. Humility, compassion, and wisdom go hand in hand in Zen. In almost all of the various religious traditions, humility is widely seen as a virtue, which focuses on reducing self-preoccupation and other forms of pride. There's very little in Buddhist literature about cultivating humility. You know, we have the Four Noble Truths, the Noble Eightfold Path, the Paramitas, and the Precepts, to name just a few. However, these fundamentals are silent on developing humility, even though it's there. The word humility is essentially absent. Probably the best known text for developing humility in a spiritual context is within Christianity. It's called the Rule of Saint Benedict. Saint Benedict was a 16th century monk. He essentially created a handbook for monks on how to live in harmony in monastic communities, which is still used to this day. According to Saint Benedict, in order to discover God's power in our lives, we need to climb the ladder of humility. That's exactly how he words it. In the seventh chapter of his handbook, which is titled On Humility, he outlines the 12 rungs of his ladder. They are fear of God, self-denial, obedience, perseverance, repentance, serenity, self-abasement, prudence, silence, dignity, discretion, and reverence. And this is how the chapter on humility starts out. A monk should constantly keep in mind that all who despise God will burn in hell for their sins, and that eternal life is prepared for those who fear him. Burn in hell. Now that's a humbling thought. I would say that's a pretty powerful way to start a chapter on humility. And it's interesting that there are 12 rungs on St. Benedict's ladder. It's kind of like the 12-step program to humility. Mahayana Buddhism, which Zen is a part of, is really all about giving, generosity or dana, and humility. Generosity and humility. Even though we don't explicitly have a formal path to humility similar to the rule of St. Benedict, We do have in our practice a number of teachings, fundamentals, and vows with regards to humility. These are controlling ego, the Heart Sutra, the role of silence, taking refuge, the great vows, benefit for all, the precepts, and bowing, to name just a few. So let's look at some of these. In Zen, we spend a lot of time talking about ego. If we think of our own spiritual practice, it seems to me that it really is a journey in humility. Because we typically view the world from me, mine, and I, because of ego, this is a journey in seeing things as they really are. As I mentioned, the definition of humility really means being firmly grounded rather than being overwhelmed and carried away by concepts, fantasies, and desires. Dissatisfaction is centered upon the work of ego, and humility is freedom from ego. These two words capture the gist of bondage and freedom, the gist of our practice. The two things that we are constantly working on. We can learn to abide in dissatisfaction as the cutting edge of this practice, as a very important part of it. We can stop, pause, and gently explore the kinds of dissatisfactions and challenges we come across. The Dharma teaches us about mental firmness and gentleness. In doing so, we become less identified with our own dissatisfactions. Being less identified with our own dissatisfactions means less ego, and less ego means more humility. I think this is the way our practice works, but we have to see this and see it again and again and again. Greater humility means more freedom and inner peace. There's an article I like to share. It's called A Journey from Humiliation to Humility. And humiliation in this context really is suffering or dissatisfaction. And it's by Corrado Pensa. And he is author and a guiding teacher of the Association of Mindfulness Meditation in Rome, where he's also a professor of Eastern philosophy. He's also a psychotherapist, too. And this is what he says. If one thinks of one's own practice, it seems to me it is safe to define it as a process from humiliation to humility. Because of me and mine and I, because of ego, this is a process from the suffering which is experienced as humiliation to the freedom of humility and seeing things as they are. Humility means being firmly planted on the ground, rather than being overwhelmed and carried away by projections, desires, and aversions. Humiliation is centered upon the work of ego, and humility is freedom from ego. These two words capture the core of bondage and freedom, the heart of our practice. Maybe the only effort we need to make is to re-own the word humility in its true sense, which often gets lost in a pseudo-humility. It means remaining motionless within humiliation. We can learn to abide in humiliation as the cutting edge of this practice, as a very important part of it. We can stop, pause, and gently explore all kinds of suffering we come across. The Buddha teaches basically about remaining motionless in fear, about mental firmness and gentleness. And this is the quote of the Buddha that he uses. If fear came while I was walking up and down, said the Buddha, I would keep walking up and down. If fear came while I was sitting, I would continue sitting. If fear came while I was standing, I would continue standing. And if fear came while I was lying down, I would continue lying down. This is not a different teaching. Maybe the words are different, the angle is different, but it is essentially the same. Now, to the extent that we get into this different perspective, we become less identified with our suffering. Being less identified with our suffering means less ego. And less ego means feeling less humiliated and more humble. This is the way the practice works. I don't know of any other shortcuts. End of quote. You know, the Prajna Paramita Heart Sutra, possibly the best known text of Mahayana Buddhism, is said to be the pure distillation of wisdom, or prajna. The sutra is based on a dialogue between Avalokiteshvara and the Bodhisattva of Compassion and Shariputra, one of the Buddha's most accomplished disciples. The sutra articulates the core of Buddhist doctrine of emptiness. In the beginning of the Heart Sutra is this perplexing phrase, "Listen, Shariputra, form is emptiness, and emptiness is form. Form is not other than emptiness, emptiness is not other than form. The same is true with feelings, perceptions, mental formations, and consciousness." The Heart Sutra calls on us to forget ourselves. This, for many, is problematic because we often define our entire life project as finding ourselves. Finding ourselves is obviously important, but the problem comes in when we start to harden our own sense of self. At that point, we are now starting to reinforce ego. The Heart Sutra asks us to recognize that there is no independent self. In other words, we are not so special that we could be here without anyone else, without the vast number of external situations and events that led to the possibility of our existence, and that our continued existence is dependent and interconnected with everyone and everything else. In other words, we are empty of a separate self. This wisdom is deeply tied to humility. Wisdom is the humble surrender to the interdependence of everything. With regards to silence, the one thing that we have in common with Saint Benedict's rule is silence. Going into silence on a daily basis is a deeply spiritual experience. Silence has the ability to help blunt our egos and make room for humility. Silence is hard to accept as real and meaningful in a society that commands us to be satisfied and fulfilled at every moment. Silence is more than just the absence of sound. We can be reduced to silence in times of doubt, uncertainty, and awe. It is at these times that humility is likely to surface. Then we have the four great vows. The first of which is, however innumerable all beings are, I vow to love them all. Talk about humility. These vows are the embodiment of our practice, an expression of a bodhisattva's wisdom and compassion. Wisdom is a realization of the nature of the self and the universe. Compassion is the manifestation of that wisdom. Contrary to what we see and hear in today's mainstream media, we are all hardwired for compassion. It is this compassion that keeps the bodhisattva functioning in the world. What do we mean by bodhisattva? Bodhi means enlightenment or to awaken, the state endowed with all good qualities. Sattva refers to someone who has courage and confidence to strive to attain enlightenment for the sake of all beings. These four great vows are recited, reflected upon, and embraced every day at Zen centers and monasteries around the world. The vows seem vast, huge, perhaps intimidating. When I first read these vows some 40 years ago, I thought, now that takes a lot of guts to think that anybody could ever master them. Never alone, just try to master one. However, I now view them differently. Maybe, just maybe, they can be realized. And if more people became aware of the vows and placed greater faith in them, and then changed that faith into responsibility, I can't help but think that the world would be a very different place. As part of our practice, we also embrace the words Ashantideva, the great 8th century Buddhist master, when we recite a benefit for all. When we recite the great vows and a benefit for all, as we will tonight, we are affirming our intention to be a benefit to all beings, and this requires humility on our part. Then we have taking refuge, or taking refuge in the Buddha, the Dharma, the teachings, and the Sangha, the spiritual community. These are the first three Bodhisattva precepts. Taking refuge is an act of humility, because it is surrendering to something bigger than ourselves. Then as part of the precepts, we have the three pure precepts. Do not create evil. Practice good. Actualize good for others. The three pure precepts essentially define the order of harmony in the universe. It is a harmonious universe. In a harmonious universe, there is not creating evil. There is practicing good, and there is the actualization of good for others. The three pure precepts are pure because they're absolute. They are pure because they reach everywhere. Evil has no independent existence. It is dependent upon its creator, humans. The 10 grave precepts are the functioning of the three pure precepts. In other words, they answer the question, how? How do you not create evil? How do you practice good? And how do you actualize good for others? Perhaps one of the most visible ways that we students of the Dharma express humility is by bowing. We bow a lot. In Buddhism, bowing is a practice of gratitude, non-duality, and humility. Bowing is a physical expression of the Buddha's teaching. It is the dropping away of the ego and its myriad attachments. It is the acknowledgement of that the self and other are not two separate things. Some find it physically difficult to bow before a religious figure, let alone another human being. This struggle is often based on the confusion of humility with weakness. A famous example of this is the uproar raised by some folks over the fact that President Obama bowed deeply at the waist when greeting Japanese Emperor Akihito in 2009. His cultural sensitivity was seen as a display of spinelessness and met with groveling by many pundits and columnists. For those puffed up with pride, to offer even a mild bow would certainly seem to deny one's own self-respect. So is bowing truly spinelessness? Almost all of the world's great religions have rituals of expressing humility, the most basic of which is bowing. And this is what Maizumi Roshi had to say about bowing and humility. In making the bow, We should move neither hastily nor sluggishly, but simply maintain a reverent mind and humble attitude. When we bow too fast, the bow is then too casual a thing. Perhaps we are even hurrying to get it over with and done with. This is frequently the result of a lack of reverence. On the other hand, if our bow is too slow, then it becomes a rather pompous display. We may have gotten attached to the feeling of bowing, or our own real or imagined gracefulness of movement. This is to have lost the humble attitude which a bow requires. I always liked this quote by C.S. Lewis, who was a theologian and scholar. And I think this really sums it up. Humility is not thinking less of oneself, but thinking of yourself less. Kind of encapsulate it in just a few words. So in conclusion, in Zen, we have a number of teachings and vows that are fundamental with regards to humility. These are the Heart Sutra, the Role of Silence, Taking Refuge, the Great Vows, a Benefit for All, the Precepts, and Bowing, to name just a few. Central to our practice is the phrase, "I don't know," which permeates every aspect of Zen. In Zen, "I don't know" stands as a powerful symbol of humility, openness, acceptance of life's profound mysteries. More than an expression of ignorance, it signifies a purposeful unburdening of preconceived notions and consciousness embrace of life's intricate uncertainty. It serves as a reminder that wisdom often lies not in acquiring knowledge, but in the willingness to question and explore.